Sermon 61. During the battle of Siphon, Imam Ali saw that those people who were clamoring most for the battle and were loudest in complaining of the delay and most boisterous about their bravery proved themselves to be timid and coward when the war actually broke out. In the following speech, he explained to them the consequences of their cowardice and timidity and told them what type of people were those who accompanied the Holy Prophet, how selfless and sincere were they in the cause of Allah, and how they helped in securing a heaven in Medina. Those of us who were with our Holy Prophet, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, were so selfless and sincere in the service of Islam that while defending our Prophet and our religion, they fought against their nearest and dearest ones. And it was our sincerity which increased our faith in Allah, our desire to willingly and gladly submit to His will, our earnest wish to follow the right path, our will to bear patiently the sorrows and calamities, and our zeal and zest to fight to the best of our ability against the enemies of Allah and Islam. Often there used to be single combats. One person from each side would come to fight the other. Usually, it used to be a fight unto death. The combatants kept on fighting till one fell dead. Sometimes we succeeded, at other times some of us suffered defeat and death. At last, when Allah tested the sincerity of our desire, the honesty of our purpose, and the zest of our action, He crowned us with victory and disgraced our enemies with defeat, till the Muslims became a powerful community and found the country to live in safely and happily, and Islam became popular amongst the people. I swear by my life that if we had behaved as you are behaving now, if we had been as nervous and timid as you are today, if we had been as wavering and lethargic as you are, the pillar of faith could not have been erected, and the tree of religion could not have bloomed. By Allah, your thoughts and deeds are destroying you and will bring shame and disgrace to you. Psalm 62. In this sermon, there is a prophecy that Muawiyah would rule the Islamic world after the death of Imam Ali and would force the people to calumniate the Imam and forsake him. Imam Ali advises people what to do then. It is a prophecy which came out true. Certainly after my death, you will be overpowered and ruled by a pot-bellied glutton. He will eat away whatever he will find and will even demand for things which are not available. Beware, he will ask you to calumniate me and to disown me. So far as calumniation is concerned, you can obey his orders because it will save you from his wrath and tyranny, and it will vindicate the truth of my cause. But so far as disowning me is concerned, you should not do so, because I am a Muslim by birth, and I was the first to testify on behalf of the Holy Prophet and to accept the ordeal of confinement with the Holy Prophet to Shi'b Abi Talib. Sermon 63. When Muawiyah violated the terms of the Treaty of Siphon and started getting ready for an invasion of Kufa, Imam Ali decided not to wait for Muawiyah's attack, but to invade Syria himself. He asked Kharijites to come to his help, but they refused on the plea that being the lawful caliph, he should not have submitted to the arbitration, and by so doing he had deliberately violated the principles of Islam. It was an open apostasy, and only if he confessed and repented it, they would come to his help. He, in reply to their message, spoke thus: May you be punished by Allah
for falsely defaming me. May nobody remain amongst you to correct your wrong views and to introduce reforms in your society. Having the faith that I have in Allah and keeping the company with the Holy Prophet, I defended Islam and Muslims in the battlefields and outside of them. Do you expect me to wrongly accept apostasy just to please you? It would be unfair to adopt such a course, and if I do it, people will have a right to consider me as misguided. The right course for you is to give up your false views and to come back to the fold of true religion. Beware, your misguided policy will bring death and destruction to you. I'm afraid in near future, tyrants and oppressors will make a habit of subjecting you to humiliation, tyranny, and death. This prophecy came true in the Battle of Nahrwan, in which about 9,000 enemy men were killed, and history shows that after the passing away of Imam Ali, Muhallab bin Abi Sufra, Ubaidullah bin Umar, Harith bin Rabia, Abdurrahman bin Mikhnaf, and lastly, Hajjaj bin Yusuf were most keen on killing the Khajiites, and for years they were tortured and driven from pillar to post. Sermon 64. When the Khajiites adopted an aggressively militant attitude and resolved to invade Basra, Imam Ali was informed that their army had crossed the bridge at Nahrwan and was marching towards the capital. Imam Ali replied, "They will all be killed on that side of Tigris. I swear by Allah that out of their army hardly 10 men will escape death, and from amongst you hardly 10 will be martyred." Allama Sheikh Muhammad Abdo of Egypt says, "This prophecy came out to be true. In the Battle of Nahrwan, the whole of their army was annihilated, and only 9 Khajiites could flee the battlefield to propagate their belief, and out of the army of Imam Ali, only 10 people were killed." And when he was informed of this and was told that Khajiites had come to an end, he remarked what is contained in the following sermon. The last words of it contain the greatest and the highest value of ethics. It shows the respect that Imam Ali wanted to create in the minds of the people about sincere decisions. Every person should have a right to profess his own faith, and unless he leads a life harmful to mankind, following the Satan, he should not be molested. No, by Allah, it is not the case. The Khajiites institution has not come to an end. Many more Khajiites will still be born, and whenever they will gather under a leader and a banner, they will be killed till their last generation will be forced to lead the life of dacoits and thieves. But after my death, you should not kill Khajiites, because he who is in search of truth and religion and has failed to reach this goal is better than the person who is in search of the Satan and finds him and follows him. Sermon 65. When Imam Ali was informed that some persons were planning to make a surprise attack on him and kill him, he said, "Allah's protecting shield is still protecting me. On the day which is fixed for my death, this shield will disappear and will hand me over to death. On that day, death will not miss its target, and the mortal wound will not heal." Sermon 66. Some commentators think this sermon is a part of Sermon 57. In this, Imam Ali has recounted the realities of life and what one has to face and how to deal with them. Remember that this world is a place where there is no safety from sorrows and afflictions, while one is engulfed in it. Whatever worldly gains a man acquires cannot secure salvation for him. Human beings are tried here with calamities and sorrows, and are tempted by impiety and sin. Those who have collected worldly pleasures around them will have to leave them. And on the day of reckoning, they will have to give an account of how they came in possession of such wealth or power, and what they did with it. And those who have spent their lives in good deeds shall find their rewards waiting for them in paradise, which they shall enjoy forever. Sages always looked upon this world as a shadow, which would appear, spreading, contracting, and finally disappearing. Sermon 67. In this sermon, Imam Ali has warned us of certain basic facts about life. First of all, he draws our attention towards the fact that life and everything connected with it is mundane and mortal. Life is being shortened with the passage of every moment. The permanent abode of man is paradise or hell. One must, in this life, try to gain a place in paradise. The second point, which Imam Ali emphasizes, is death. It is sure to come, but its approach is incomprehensible, mysterious, unobserved, and unavoidable. We must always be ready to face it. Then there is the warning about Satan, how he wants to mislead us, and painting sins and vices with charm and beauty, how he tries to allure us to his domain. Lastly, Imam Ali advises us to realize that we are not created without any purpose. Hence, we must attain that purpose by virtuous deeds. O people, fear Allah and do everything in anticipation of death, and try to attain everlasting blessings in place of transitory and perishable wealth, power, and pleasures of this world. Be prepared for a fast passage, because here you are destined to stay for a short time. Always be ready for death, because you are living under its shadow. Be wise like the people who have heard the message of Allah and have taken a warning from it. Beware that this world is not your eternal abode. You will have to leave it for the hereafter. Allah, glory be to Him, has not created you without a purpose, and has not left you without duties, obligations, and responsibilities. There is no barrier between you and paradise or the hell, but that of death, which everyone will have to cross. Life, which is being shortened by every tick of a second, is like a building which is being undermined and may fall down any moment. Human being, whom each turn of night and day is driving towards his end, is destined to reach there soon. Death, which approaches everybody with certain and steady pace, and which may either bring success or failure for the hereafter, deserves to be warmly welcomed. You must remember to gather from this life such harvest as will be of use and help to you in the hereafter. Every human being should fear the Almighty Allah, should train his mind for virtuous and honorable ideas in sincere and just deeds, should repent of his sins and vices, and should keep his desires, longings, and impulses under control, because the approach of death is so incomprehensible, so mysterious, so insidious, and so unobserved that it is never realized or felt, because inordinate ambitions and desires often cheat and make one to go astray, and because Satan is always watching for opportunities to enslave you, is trying to depict sins and vices with beauty and charmed to entrap you with them, and is constantly endeavoring to make you give up the desire of sober thinking and repentance with bright hopes till death comes upon you suddenly at a time when you were expecting it the least. I pity negligent and unmindful people, because on the day of judgment their deeds will act as proof against their ill intentions and evil deeds and lead them to hell. I pray to Allah to make me amongst the persons whom His bounties have not made proud and arrogant, whose deeds and accomplishments have not kept them away from obedience to Him, and whom death will not bring sorrows and shame, repentance and regret. Sermon 68. In this sermon, Imam Ali has taught us how to comprehend the might and the glory of Allah, His omnipresence and omnipotence. He wants us to understand that we can never fully realize or envisage His being or imagine His attributes. He has cited certain examples of human attributes, comparing human limitations with His omnipotence, so that we may not imagine Him as a magnified example of our good qualities and attributes, a superman. In the same way, Imam Ali has explained that Allah is beyond the limits of time and space and beyond the possibility of a beginning or an end. Praise and glory be to the Supreme Being, whose existence is not subjected to any change of circumstances and conditions. He was before anything came into existence and will remain after everything has come to an end. His glory and greatness was distinctly apparent and unmistakably evident, even before minds of His creatures could try to realize or discern it. Except Him, every object which we think of is insignificant and paltry. Every existing thing believed to be great is humble and modest. Every being imagined to be strong is weak and timid. Everyone supposed to be master of himself or of his surroundings is actually a slave of circumstances. Every person deemed to be learned is in reality no better than a school child, and every creature considered to be mighty is in fact a weakling, helpless in the hands of nature. Every ear but His is unable to hear the faint sounds, is deafened by harsh ones, and is incapable of perceiving the distant ones. No eye but His can discern the palest shades of the colors, or can behold ethereal objects. Except His sublime being, every other thing supposed to be having a distinct entity has no important place in the universe. And every being supposed to have a mystical origin actually has an unmistakably ascertainable existence. He did not bring into existence His creatures to strengthen His kingdom, to arm Himself against the change of circumstances, or defend Himself against His rivals and enemies. They were the created beings whom He nourished, over whom He has complete control, and who are absolutely humble and weak before His power and might. He has not incarnated Himself into His creatures, and it cannot be said that He is part of the universe or things created by Him. Neither He is far away from His creation, nor can this be said that He is quite aloof from and has no control over it. Bringing the universe into existence has neither tired him, nor has the origination of the cosmos exhausted him. Neither he felt helpless and deficient in having complete control over his creatures, nor had he ever any uncertainty about the program of creation. He never doubted about his decisions. Fates of things ordained by him are inevitable and unavoidable. His knowledge is supreme. His orders are binding. When calamities and disasters overwhelm us, we can have hope in him alone. And when we are surrounded with wealth and affluence, we must not forget his displeasure and wrath. Sermon 69. In the Battle of Siphon, one day both the armies fought continuously for 24 hours. The fight during the night was terrible. It is called Laylatul Harir. On the morning of that night, Imam Ali spoke thus to his officers. O Muslims, make a habit of always remembering and fearing Allah. And during a battle, be calm, self-relying, resolute and bold. Only thus you will keep enemies' swords away from you. Keep your arms and armor in order and make certain that your swords can easily and freely come out of the sheaths. Keep an eye on your enemies, and while fighting, use your spears and swords freely. Remember that Allah is watching you, and you are fighting under command of the cousin and son-in-law of the Holy Prophet. Peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants. Keep on constantly attacking the enemy. Do not accept the shame and disgrace of a defeat or rout, for which you shall be punished on the Day of Judgment, because yours is a jihad in defense of Islam, truth and justice. Death in this battlefield is a death in the cause of Allah, and you must, as true Muslims, face it cheerfully and must advance towards it unfalteringly, unflinchingly, boldly and gladly. The hordes of your enemy's army are in front of you. Attack them and try to reach the yonder tent. The Satan is resting in the shade of that tent, ready either to advance or to retreat. You must fight resolutely and courageously till the divine light illuminates your way and success leads you towards glory and Allah. Allah the Almighty is with you, and He will not grudge to reward you generously for your courage and bravery in this jihad. 7:70. When the news of the happenings of Saqifa Bani Sa'idah reached Imam Ali, he inquired about the reactions of the Ansar to the question of the Caliphate. To his astonishment, Ali was informed that the Ansar also fell a prey to the lure of rulership and demanded that, as a price of their agreement to this so-called election, they must also be given leadership, and there should be one leader from the Muhajirs and one from the Ansar. The Imam inquired why nobody reminded the Ansar of the will of our Holy Prophet, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, that the virtuous Ansar should be treated kindly and the bad ones should be forgiven. The companions inquired of the Imam as to how this would have acted as an inspiration for the Ansar. He replied, if leadership and caliphate could have been the right of the Ansar, the Holy Prophet would not have willed for kindness and clemency to them. Because a desire for kindness and mercy is to safeguard the privilege of the ruled and not to defend the ruler. Then Imam Ali inquired about the way the Quraysh replied to the demand of Ansar. He was told that the Quraysh claimed to belong to the same patriarch as the Holy Prophet. Apparently, the claim of kinship stopped the Ansar from pressing their demand. The Imam remarked, "They, the Quraysh, argued for the tree and ignored its fruit." 771. Muhammad, the son of Caliph Abu Bakr, was adopted by Ali after the death of the Caliph. Ali loved, treated and trained this boy as his own son. During his lifetime, he was always called Muhammad bin Ali and was also designated as the third after Husnain, Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein. He grew up to a handsome, bold, virtuous and learned young man. He also loved the Imam and hated his enemies with the intensity that love of truth in young age and bold nature could produce. With all his good qualities, he had one weakness which caused him his death. He always underrated his enemies. While sending him to Egypt as governor, Imam Ali had advised him to be very careful of Muawiyah. Unfortunately for himself and Egypt, he did not attach as much importance to this advice as it deserved. He overestimated his strength, lost the battle against Amr bin As, and was later duped and killed by Muawiyah's henchmen. News of his death saddened the Imam, and on that occasion he said, "I wanted to appoint Hashim bin Utbah as the governor of Egypt. If I had done so, he would not have left Egypt unguarded and would not have given the enemy a chance to invade and occupy it. But thus praising Hashim, I have no intention of censoring Muhammad. He was my adopted son, and we always loved each other. As a matter of fact, Imam Ali loved Muhammad so much that on one occasion he said, 'Muhammad is my son, though born of Abu Bakr.'"
Sermon 72. "How far can I caress you as a she-camel with a wounded back is caressed? Or how long can I keep on treating you tenderly and delicately as if you are old clothes, which when stitched on one side get torn on the other, and the user cannot replace them? From your timidity and cowardice it is apparent that if one of the armies of Syria appears on the horizon, every one of you, like a desert lizard or a hyena, will scamper to your house and will bolt the door from inside. I swear by Allah that he who believes in your help and who tries to secure a success with your aid will earn disgrace and defeat. You gather in crowds in city squares, but on a battlefield, only a few of you can be seen. I know how to force you to submission and obedience, and how to make you work. But I do not want to be a tyrant and a slave driver. I want you to serve Allah and religion of your own free will. May you be disgraced by Allah. Do you not realize that you are drawn more towards falsehood and sin than towards truth and religion? And you do not hate vice as much as you abhor virtue.